Hi, and welcome to the Data Engineering Podcast, hosted by Cynthia. I'm Jason Gould. I'll be looking after the discussion every week. We'll cover a host of topics like DevOps and tooling, programming languages, strategies, and all that kind of stuff. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoy it. Hopefully, we'll catch you next time. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Data Platform Podcast number 9. This week, as always, I'm Jason, and with me I have Tomo. And we have a special guest, a non-Cynthian with us this week, called Livio from Mindsmith.
Hi, guys. I'm Livio. I'm a software engineer. I'm currently working at Mindsmith, where we're trying to create the most powerful AI platform for building autonomous systems. And my role is basically to lead innovations. That is, I lead the R&D team.
Cool. Welcome. Nice to have you here. Topic for this week is microservices, love them or loathe them, or could it be microservices, the future of technology or the bane of existence? Tomo, what do you think?
What do I think? Yeah, well, we'll talk about microservices and how to handle data in microservice architecture, and I don't have that strong feelings about microservices. I like the decoupling of the systems, and sometimes they're very natural to me, and sometimes I see weird stuff as well as I see them in monoliths and other architectures. So yeah, I think it will be interesting. We'll learn something
cool
all together.
So Livio, because obviously he's far more forward-thinking than we are, he has a piece of paper with him.
Definitely.
With some stuff written down on it.
Yeah.
I am really interested to find out what he's got on there.
Yeah.
Livio, what microservices?
Microservices. So what are microservices? Microservices are an architectural pattern that structures systems as a collection of smaller services. Cool. That's basically it. Of course, like every architecture, it has its pros and cons. Microservices do enable you to develop rapidly, to release frequently, to deliver reliably large, complex applications. And like Thomas mentioned, the decoupling is a great feature of it. However...
Oh, I love this bit, however.
Yeah.
However, the thing that most people stumble upon is that the complexity is so large that most people just lose themselves in everything. Because when you have microservices, the first and foremost thing you need to get right is the domains. Mm. The domains of each service. So how do you, if you had a monolith, how do you split it up? If you do it wrong, then you'll have to do it all over again because everything will just crash and not work. Then there's the monitoring cost, the infrastructure cost, the upfront cost of doing this before you actually get to code your application. Yeah, stuff like that.
So how much pre-work do you do realistically, sort of from a, you know, How much design do you realistically need to do beforehand, and do the benefit of decoupling and the reduction of dependency management and everything else, does that counterbalance the additional complexity that you add, or does it depend?
What's the ratio?
Yeah, I think it really depends. There's a great blog post on this topic from Martin Fowler. He basically says, look, microservices are worth it only if you're developing a very complex thing, because then you can decouple it nicely, new features are easier to add and stuff like that. But yeah, the upfront cost is, I don't know, when we were developing our own platform, we decided to go with microservices because we wanted our platform to support such complex use cases. And I'm gonna be honest, it was hell. In the beginning, it was hell. We spent like a year developing that platform, and most of it was, okay, how do we connect this thing with this thing? And we had multiple programming languages involved, we had multiple databases involved. Then we soon found out that, surprise, surprise, network is not reliable. Then you start losing messages. We have a messaging broker architecture. And then you just figure it out as you go along. But yeah, it's a long process.
So if I look at sort of the level of complexity of the stuff that I've been working in over my career, I'd say that a year up front spending trying to get everything working is actually a pretty short time.
Really?
Yeah.
But they did it from scratch. Had to build up on the old.
No, I mean, if I go back to my days at British Aerospace where we were building stuff from scratch, a year spent underlying architecture, just deciding what architecture to use is actually a pretty short time.
Yeah, well, they are an agile company. They work in more agile way. I think I would just add that I agree 100% with what you said. You have a very experienced attitude toward microservices, which is good. That means that you burned yourself a lot of times.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing is, where I saw a big benefit of using microservices is not only in designing and creating large complex solutions, but at smaller parts so you can kind of replace them when needed more easily. But the thing is that there's a real life stories from migrating old legacy monsters. And when I say monsters, I think of actually monstrous databases which are 20, 30 years old, and they have a lot all the business logic that you can imagine embedded in them. So now, how do you move from that? How do you extend your business? What you do, I mean, what I strongly believe in that you should do in that case is separate the data from that old technology. That means extract it, possibly in near real-time ingestion pattern, put it somewhere on a cloud or any other on-prem service that you can provide with the distributed file system, and then start building microservices on top of that, feature by feature. So each feature that you can round up from the old app, you build it as a separate microservice. That way, you can gradually go from the old legacy monster to a new set of microservices. And actually, it's not that I just think this is a good design. Of course, it has its flaws. But that's the only possible design that I think that you can do. I mean, hard stops, just turning off one system, migrating all the data in the new one, and then running the new one. Well, you have to be really religious to believe in that it will work
but
seamlessly.
This is an interesting topic for me as well, because obviously my love and background is on transformational stuff. And I've seen varying degrees of success of trying to break apart monoliths and transform them. And I've seen varying degrees of success of actually, we can't fix that. We need to build a new stack completely beside it and then switch over. Certainly, I know that a British car company, or I think they might be now a German car company, they've had remarkable success in going, actually, no, stop doing that completely and just build up stuff new. But I think each of them comes with a really, really severe penalty for getting it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And my sort of first thought, and then, because they've gone microservice route as well, because it's a very modular thing that they're building. And my one is that I see quite a lot in a lot of companies, them take the attitude, we need to everything microservices. And then you just add this level of, you've no idea. I like this sort of spaghetti approach that everyone talks about. You just end up with this giant spaghetti of stuff going all over the place, and you've no idea what's talking to what. Or where data is coming from.
The communication is a big problem, but exactly, data. And this is why I said that I believe the data should be offloaded from the old system and then built one by one. You can build features on top of that data. If you don't have the data, if you build features on empty database and then try to migrate the data, that's not the best idea. because you are losing contact with everyday changes that are happening on the source database, on the legacy database. Unfortunately, those things are not static. They constantly get updated. And I think that a lot of microservices, which you just said, like a sea of microservices, I mean, it's a simple architecture. It's easy to say, okay, guys, now we have a middleware component, we have a huge message broker with some safety pins, not just so you don't lose actual data, actual messages. And then, you know, use that for communication. Do not let microservices communicate internally between themselves. Although, in some cases, that can be a plausible pattern. And then the question is, where do you put databases? Where do you keep the data for each microservice? How do you sync the data? I mean, for me, the answer is clear. You should sync it in your middleware, in your message broker. But then, you know, what's the level of redundancy of the data? Or do you solve everything by creating a transactional and analytical data platform along microservices? So you have everything everywhere, which is a bit chaotic. What do you think about that?
Interesting. We had a completely different approach.
Oh.
So actually, I was just recently reading about this pattern of keeping data in the messaging broker. I think it's called event sourcing or
event sourcing,
something
yeah.
like that. Yeah. What we did in the beginning, we said, okay, we'll just keep it as simple as possible. We'll use a shared database.
Mm.
We just use one database. Every service read and wrote to that database. Then we, of course, figured out that, oh my God, we coupled everything to this. And then if we change this breaks.
Yeah.
So we said, yeah, that's not going to work. And what we did is said, okay, now each service should have its own database.
Yeah. Okay.
And we said, if your service A, you cannot read or write service B's data. You don't have access to it. You cannot look at it, because if you can, then you couple the services. And if you change the data model, then both services fall down. And now we're still doing this approach, and it actually seems to be going pretty well for us.
It's proper architecture. But then the question is, how do you exchange the simple events?
Yeah.
Between two services.
Yeah. So that's the querying / consuming problem.
Yeah.
The eternal problem. What we did is say, okay, you service, this is your database, you have your data, but you are responsible for it. Mm-hmm. So if anyone needs to change that data, you need to provide an API to change the data. If someone wants to fetch the data, you also need to provide the API. And additionally, since we wanted to go the event-driven way, we said you are responsible for emitting events that every time that data model is changed.
Yes, you should send the schema that has changed.
Yeah.
So everyone knows that you changed the schema. But also, I think that if you have common objects that all the services need to use in some way, that need to see in some way, you should also send them in your message broker. So then every service doesn't have to have an API, but they can consume those messages from a broker. And you can keep them in the broker for, let's say, a few hours.
But who owns that data?
Middleware data. As soon as you send the data in, data is yours. As soon as someone consumes them, it's him. It's his. That data, because
but who owns it whilst it's on the topic?
Who owns it? The publisher. But it's a good question. I'm not like super convinced. I'm just saying that we solved it that way. So the domain that is producing the data actually owns the data wherever the data goes.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. So then you have like service A provides some kind of canonical object that other services will use too. For any reason. And then that service creates topic. And he owns the topic and he owns the data. So here comes service B, microservice B. I'm consuming the data and I'm filtering it out. I'm just interested in several, in one category of events. At that point in time, it becomes my data. I'm the owner of the data because I changed it. I filtered it out. And then I add some more of my stuff and I send it back to message broker on my topic. And now someone else who is consuming it, let's say analytic platform, some platform, data platform that doesn't have any microservices working constantly, and they're consuming that object as the ownership of microservice B. It is a bit complex and it's hard to follow, but this is how we are solving it right now. Not because we are completely convinced that it's 100% correct or perfect, but this works for us so far.
So where is the single source of the truth?
There is no single source of the truth. No single source of truth.
So it all depends on context.
It depends on context, yeah.
You can have single
source of truth, like master data management, like let's say system, let's say a master product catalog, for instance. You have one product catalog for the whole company and you have 15 microservices using it, but that's the domain for itself. They are owning that product catalog, for instance, and sharing the product data with everyone.
Sounds like data first design.
Yeah, it's always data first design, because I think so.
And because data democratization and all these other things.
I'm always thinking data first design, because if you take a look at any kind of system, so when you bought the system 15 or 20 years ago, some software as a service system, and now you want to replace it, what's the value of that system? Mm-hmm. It's the data.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want that data. Nobody says, I don't like this application. Do you want the data? Of course. Nobody says, no, I don't want the data either. I'm just like, I'm over with that. It rarely happens.
That's a very interesting approach. I'll have to think about it.
Yeah, think about it. Yeah.
I just wanted to ask you, so what happens when the original service, service A, changes his data schema?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't there a chain reaction of everything falls apart?
It is. No, it doesn't fall apart, because then we introduce schema registry component. And schema registry is having several mechanisms. First of all, schema registry needs to notify all the consumers of the message that the schema has changed. Then, also, what we are sometimes implementing is schema evolution techniques. It's mostly for analytics. It's not for transactions, because it's hard to change some kind of consumers on the fly, just adding something in schema or changing something in schema. This is borderline craziness to do so, but it's important to just notify the consumer, you know, schema changed. This is where you can find a new schema. Please apply it to your mapping if it's of your interest, because sometimes you won't care about change of the schema. You will be okay with just consuming the part of the message if it won't break. I mean, you have breaking changes, of course. And then for consumers that are of analytical purpose, that will just land the data and then create some custom queries or whatever on the data, then you can actually apply schema evolution. But it's more of a static system. So then you will, for instance, create new DDL script and enforce it on the database.
So what do the services do when they get notification, hey, this change, and let's say it's a breaking change for me, what does it do?
If it's a breaking change, then actually they need to immediately change the consumer. But that can also be done with inheriting the schema and creating the custom mappings. Because, I mean, for each microservice, you're not consuming your data and immediately, you always have some kind of a backend, some kind of a validation. But I think that validation should be announced from the producer and applied and consumed by the consumer. Not applied and consumed, but applied by consumer.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah, it's, as I said, it's just what we kind of learned to do because we were faced with such things. And then you're thinking, well, how to solve that? And then you go into literature and you have solution A, B, C, D, you know. But generally, I don't like breaking changes all that much. maybe I can imagine a few cases where they will appear.
You know what I'm really interested in?
No, listening.
This is a problem we're facing now.
Mm-hmm.
How do you handle when you have multiple programming languages? So you have
serialization
Python,
issues.
Java. No, not serialization.
Okay.
How do you define the data model?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you use like protobuf or?
Yeah, we use Avro and protobuf.
Mm-hmm.
The issue is that the thing is also that we are kind of trying to keep. I know it's impossible. I know that we have we are working on projects for customers, and we know that it's impossible to have just one language for backend. Although I'm a big fan of having one language as backend. We're using Go for instance, and that's it for the components that we are using as our accelerators. But serialized messages, Avros, protobufs are great vessels for data, I think.
Mm.
Especially because you can embed a schema in it. I'm not the biggest fan of plain text as a message, because it's also, you know, I think today what you should do, what everyone who wants to process and distribute and test the data and create sandboxes and try to extract some business value from it, they should in some way use internet as a protocol of moving the data around, and the cloud services as a way of processing it. So when you use internet, your data needs to be serialized and encrypted, just for the safety's sake. So it's,
of course.
And then, you know, you're saving a lot of bandwidth with serialization. So, yay for serialization. I can't say anything bad about serialization.
Save the world.
Save the world, yeah. Save the world, you serialize your data.
It's a more sustainable approach as well.
Well, it is, yeah.
Because saves less storage space, less transfer space, yeah. Therefore less
heat energy
and
consumption.
Less energy consumption. Yeah.
Less electricity.
Yeah, saves the planet.
Yeah.
Be sustainable. Yeah. Serialize.
Serialize your data. Super. And yeah, so what I'm interested in also is one of the domain that we do not cover ourselves. We are not the experts. And this is the domain of machine learning and data science. So how do you create? I was always wondering about that. So for instance, you know, you have some machine learning algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
Can you deploy it as a microservice? Does it make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it does?
Absolutely, yeah.
Can you please just speak about that a bit? So, I don't have any experience with that.
Yeah. You would basically, so when you create, when you do machine learning, what you do is create a model,
mm-hmm.
like a neural network, a Bayesian network, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then to use it,
mm-hmm.
you will often package it in a service that has a simple API, and that API is, here's your input,
mm-hmm.
give me your output.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that's basically it. The problem is, how do you retrain the model every so often?
Mm-hmm.
So where do you store your data? Is it a data warehouse? Mm-hmm. Do you have a process for how often you do it? Do you do online learning, which is learning from every example?
Mm-hmm.
When you get the input, you learn immediately from it. So all those kind of stuff. And recently there have been frameworks that do this, for example, MLflow.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, mm-hmm. I haven't tried them,
mm-hmm.
Because we didn't have much need for them.
Mm-hmm.
But I imagine we'll probably do something like that,
mm-hmm.
use something like that.
Super. Because I was also thinking, not a lot, but I was thinking if I was the one deploying. And now I'm speaking strictly from the side of deploying things and maintaining and operating them. It seems like a perfect component to design as a microservice, right?
Yeah, totally.
Because it's, yeah, you can, I mean, even when you are retraining the model, it's much easier to automate the deployment of a new model and not change the database, and you can actually do it on the fly.
Exactly.
Mm.
And you can do canary deployments, test if the new model is better than the old one.
No.
All kinds of stuff.
This is interesting use of canary deployments. I was always thinking about canary deployments exclusively on how to handle load balancing, you know, how to have your application working the whole time that you're applying the new ones. But I didn't think about that. So you can measure. Yeah,
like A/B testing stuff.
Yeah. That's super, super cool. Okay, so that's like microservices work well with data first approach also, I would say.
I think so too. Although we don't use it.
Yeah, well.
But I will consider it.
Yeah, I consider it. I mean, and I'm also, it's so fun. That you mentioned, I mean, it's not fun, but it's interesting that you mentioned the message loss on message brokers. And the first component that we saw that we need to design and deploy as a separate component and as an open source component was actually a permanent persister component, which is persisting the data from any message broker. What it does, it just subscribes, creates a subscription to a topic, and then just stores the data from the topic somewhere on a file system. So, and you know, and you always have people saying, well, why would you do that? It's there, it's in the topic, it won't disappear. And then we said, yeah, that's what we thought.
Try acting the message and then getting it back again.
Exactly. And then I act those messages and then something broke. Or I need to reprocess those messages because I screwed something up. And then that was the first one. So it's interesting that everyone kind of stumbles on that.
Interestingly enough, we had an opposite problem.
Oh.
Fairly recently. So we
duplicate.
Exactly. So we use Apache Pulsar.
Yeah,
I don't know, something happened. It froze or something. And then the service that actually sends out messages to the users gets a duplicated message, and a bunch of users get the same message twice. Yeah.
Don't worry about it. It happens a lot. It happens a lot. It happens on multiple message brokers. I won't name names, but it happens a lot. It happens a lot, even on the big ones, on the big ones. But the thing is that the deduplication of the message, more or less, is always up to consumer. You know, our job as a backend guys, as a data guys, is to make sure that you don't lose a message. Duplicates happen.
If you get it more than once, it's fine because we haven't lost it.
Exactly. No, I agree. It's not good to have it more than once, but I would always put the deduplication on the consumer side. I mean, it's basic hygiene.
Interesting you mentioned that because I was just reading Pulsar has inbuilt message deduplication and I was just thinking, great, we just turned that on.
Oh, it has. Deduplication. Yeah. Oh, cool.
But I don't know how it works, honestly.
Still, I think that even with that deduplication, if I want to persist messages forever and be sure that I will have them, because there are several reasons why it's good to have those messages, even if they're not available anymore in broker. It's not just that your procedure will hack it and break, and then the consumer won't get the message. But there's also an issue of having to reprocess messages for some reason.
Oh.
Reprocessing of messages, and then it's good to have them on a cheap storage and not have them, you know, piling on the broker because it slows the broker down. So this is also the reason that
the problem we have is, okay, we're emitting events, and then so what we do is what's the thing called, event streaming or something like that. So basically, if you're interested in some data, you listen to that topic and you make a copy of that data in your service. And then we have problems when we're creating a new service, deploying it to an already existing system. How does it sync its data? It either needs to reprocess millions of messages or we need to do it manually.
Yeah.
And that's something we still haven't figured out.
Yeah, it's fun stuff. I have some ideas. I'll share it with you.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, and they're not like groundbreaking ideas, but also, yeah, we encounter that issue from time to time. But and we even decouple that. Maybe we are fully microserviced because we decouple the handling of the messages, first storing them to storage and then building some kind of a smarter layer on top of those messages. So you can store the metadata as the index and then you can search when you're, we have like API and you can search the either the range of messages that you want to reprocess or the single message that you want to reprocess. So that helps a lot. But it's all, again, just decoupling from everything everywhere. So then it's always available.
We're a big fan of decoupling.
Yeah, we are actually. Sometimes it goes too far.
No, we decoupled yeah. literally the word D sometimes from coupling.
Coupling. But you know... But so far we haven't been burned so many times because, you know, even with, I also wanted to ask you one question. So what do you think about, we have several services, microservices, whatever you call them, that are not just keeping their own database, but they're also having their own message broker.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. That's a new thing. That's
why?
Because we need a non-shared middleware component. I'll tell you why. For instance, now I'm kind of going into dark web territory.
Architecture mode.
Yeah, dark architecture territory. So it's sometimes there are some service components, not the feature-based components, but service-based components like logging libraries or something like that, which on some programming languages you have to build for yourself. You can't, and it's good because you don't use the huge frameworks just to have basic error handling. Mm. You create your own error handling. And then, you know, you're collecting errors, you're collecting standard outputs, you're collecting all kinds of stuff. And then you store it usually. What you would do, you would find some kind of a storage file system or some kind of NoSQL database, you will store it inside of that database. But then whoever wants to access those logs has to have access to that database through the API. Okay. And maybe your component is too busy processing huge amounts of logs to be able to serve that. Mm. So then you have these small, nice, super friendly message brokers like Nuts that you can just pack as a separate Docker component and put on top of that. So then you put all the logs in Nuts and you consume yourself, but you also expose for consuming the messages that are in the broker.
So you basically use the messaging broker as an API.
As an API, yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, you can also build your own in-memory caching system between the API and the database. But this is more simple. This is simpler. And it works well.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. And but unfortunately, you don't have a huge selection of open source small brokers. You have just a few.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's RabbitMQ.
Yeah, but they're working well.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. RabbitMQ is also good, but it doesn't scale as expected. Although maybe it does now. I haven't used it for
haven't
a while.
Haven't used it for a long time.
Yeah.
Me neither. Can't say.
Yeah. Right, so.
We handle logging differently.
Oh, cool.
Shock. We use the most basic logging library there is. Mm-hmm. Log it to the console. Mm-hmm. Use the file bit to siphon those logs in a file. And then we just store the file somewhere. Mm-hmm.
That's proper logging.
That's proper logging. Yeah. No, it's good. It's good. We were kind of trying to be fancy with FluentBit and everything. it works well. It's interesting. It's also a microservice. You design the logging system as a microservice.
True.
In that case, right? Now that's decoupling.
it's our magic catchphrase. Can we decouple this? Yeah. Cool. Let's decouple it.
Yeah. So super, this is a super technical blog. I'm super happy about it. My face is like, I'm grinning the whole time.
No, it's all right. I'm going to summarize it.
You can summarize it
business.
Yeah, you can put some kind of a business value on top of it.
Yeah. Try.
You can try.
So to summarize, decoupling is good. Potentially microservices are bad. It's a super interesting one, this, for me, because obviously we do talk about decoupling everything all the time, because it's the one way you can guarantee that it's simple to change in the future. And if there's one thing we can guarantee, you're going to want to change it in the future. And dependency management is the bane of everything, but so is hyper-complexity. So you've really got to choose your level of granularity and how far you want to decouple stuff, because otherwise you just can't manage it. And I think for me as well, is it's building systems that are suitable for the customer's journey and separating them out to each part of that journey, rather than trying to shoehorn every journey and every possible customer journey into a single system, even if it's like front end stuff. Don't shoehorn it all together. You might have the same interface, but it's actually calling a whole bunch of decoupled stuff in the background, which obviously we also do. And I see these as quite big problems. So for me, microservices are absolutely essential if you architect the thing in the right way in the first place. And I think that's, for me, the takeaway. And for me, and I'll go back to my monolithic days, at the end of the day, they were all just a bunch of modules stuck together.
They were. So I fully agree. Yeah,
they were. Basically, all you've done is package together a whole bunch of microservices.
Of course.
Into a giant executable.
Yeah.
And that's all we're doing, is removing the giant wrapper around it.
Yeah.
You're and just to enable us to easier get stuff in and out without having to replace the
whole
thing.
They were packed on a very, very non-scalable infrastructure. That was the first issue that I always faced in these older systems. And it's also, it's interesting to see, from the point of view that Jason and I also did work in IT 20 odd years ago, and the level of rhythm of changes that were happening in the applications was a bit slower. Not much slower, because some of the business processes weren't yet strictly defined, and you had a huge space for optimizing, because you would do something, just do it, and then you would optimize it for a year or two. But now things are not changing in the way that they should be optimized, because the old applications are optimized to some extent. But now you have to open new sales channels. You have a pandemics, and if you don't have online sales, you can easily close your business. And imagine the hit that you have to take in opening a new sales channel, not IT-wise, organizationally, and then having your old system being able to support it.
And that's actually the thing for me, and it's why we talk a lot about, and this is also the sort of microservice approach to stuff, is decoupling the data from the systems that create the data.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Because once you've done that, you can easily replace any single piece of that system without the data being lost, compromised.
Yeah.
It's no longer that system that's important, it's the data, and it's always the data that's important.
And imagine database models. I mean, I remember database models for like insurance applications in 2000s, beginning of 2000s. There were like 500-600 tables. And the relational model, it was like, oh, okay, I'll have to take 3 or 4 days just to try and understand what is going on here. That's also not the best possible thing that you can do with your system, because then you have 5 people who actually know what's going on, which is also now showing up with the systems that haven't changed, that didn't evolve, that didn't use microservices. As soon as it was possible just to offload some part of functionality to something new, to some new service, now if you have a system like that, then it's quite expensive to change anything on it. Because less and less people are willing to sit and learn how that database model. I mean, would you do it now in your position?
Well, of course not.
Yeah, you would probably choose something else.
Yeah.
We use NoSQL.
So yeah.
Go and be a blacksmith somewhere rather than do this.
Or a blacksmith or something like that. Okay, and Livio, do you have something?
Some passing comments, some last comments. Yeah.
Well, sure. Regarding everything you said, personally, I think, what I experienced in these last few years from building a platform, I learned that basically every architectural or not decision is a trade-off. So even decoupling.
Yes.
Decoupling is awesome, we want it, but it takes a lot of resources.
Yes.
You end up with a lot of things you have to manage.
You add enormous complexity on the infrastructure.
Enormous complexity, exactly. So I always try to, now when I'm building new stuff, I always try to start with my use case. Okay, what do I need? What are my requirements? What are my options? And what are the trade-offs of those options? And I think microservices just gave us a new part of the spectrum of the trade-offs where we can choose.
A new set of trade-offs
we can choose. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
It's funny, actually, that you mentioned requirements and what's my use case and all the rest of it, because my visibility of some of this stuff is that I'm an agile microservice. I no longer need to worry about there being a use case or a requirement. I know that I have this data coming in and I know that this data needs to come out. Other than that, I'll just make it up as I go along. And this seems to be indicative right across everywhere. I see the same thing happening. I don't have a bunch of requirements because I'm agile.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, well, how the hell do you know what you're making?
Yeah. But how do you even, but that's another topic and we'll get to that topic.
Yeah.
But how do you design a system with 500 tables in a database, a complex system in agile mode?
Yeah.
You can't, because you don't have functional spec. It's made, all those systems were made when waterfall was ruling the world.
Mm.
Exactly. And that's why new things like data registries are popping up, where you just need to either find a way to handle that complexity you just created, or you'll have to fall back to a monolith.
Yeah.
You're going to use all my
they're
going to use all my microservices to deliver stuff into my monolith.
Cool.
Exactly.
Cool.
Super.
Well, thank you very much, guys. A pleasure as always, and nice to have you here, Livia.
Thank you.
Much appreciated you coming to visit us. Thanks for listening, guys, and we'll see you next time.
Yeah. Take care.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Bye.